Welcome to the Security Stories and Channel Germany podcast with Caroline Heider.
Data residency is a thing. You cannot necessarily place your data with a United States cloud provider. One of the things that we're seeing now is that these hacker groups and these threat actors, they have such a significant economic upside. We're seeing some of the classical mistakes that we've encountered in let's say the old school IT industry are now being repeated again in cloud environments.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Security Stories and Channel Germany podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Caroline Heider. I am IT editor and your host today. We are now reporting from Copenhagen from the ThinkIn Conference 2023, of course. In this podcast episode, we will talk about the threats and about the cybersecurity in general. You know, because of a home office, the use of multi-cloud technologies, or also hackers becoming more professional, companies are more exposed than ever. I am very lucky to have an expert in cybersecurity with me today. To show us how to address this goal, I would like to introduce our guest, Christian Have. He is CTO at Longpoint. Welcome, Christian.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Christian, maybe first of all, I would like to hear from you, how is the threat situation currently evolving?
Well, I think with cloud adoption going fast, even here in Europe now, picking up, we're seeing some of the classical mistakes that we've encountered in let's say the old school IT industry are now being repeated again in cloud environments.
How so?
For instance, we're seeing we have a customer of ours that migrated to an HR platform, cloud-based HR platform.
Okay.
This cloud platform was set up and everything was working according to plan. They made a mistake on-prem at a certain point in time. They changed their authorization permissions, which meant that every single employee had admin privileges to the HR system.
Wow.
They couldn't see for how long, they couldn't see what data was accessed, and they couldn't see if anyone actually abused it. They got to know about it because one of their employees said, oh, this doesn't look right, I have some buttons I shouldn't have access to.
Yeah, of course. But how would you describe the current situation?
I think that from a perspective of what's going on in the world right now, the sophistication of attacks is increasing. We're seeing, I think our CEO typically says that the cybercrime market, or let's say the money generated in cybercrime, would be the third largest country in the world in terms of economic output.
Impressive.
And I mean, it's
scary.
It just shows how significant it is. Maybe 15 years ago, you would say, "Nah, this won't hit us. So why would anyone attack us?" But
I am not important enough to be attacked.
No, why would they care about
yeah.
me? I'm just providing water to a city in Bavaria or whatever, right? So, one of the things that we're seeing now is that these hacker groups and these threat actors, they have such a significant economic upside of attacking these networks that they're becoming very sophisticated. There was
have money to do bad things.
And exactly, but I think even more so than that, another thing we're seeing is that there was this lawsuit by the United States State Department, and in that lawsuit you could see the role descriptions of some of these attackers. There were revenue officers, there were support organizations, you had middle managers with KPIs. So even the attackers,
professionals,
are now professionalizing, essentially optimizing for the most efficient way for them to do what they need to do.
Mm-hmm, of course. And why is a combination of SIEM and SOAR beneficial or important for companies these days?
I think you hit a really important point with the word combination. SIEM and SOAR has existed as separate technologies for a long time, right? And one of the things that we're seeing is that when you need to, SOAR is automation and orchestration, right? So Orchestration is essentially getting the rest of your infrastructure to do what you needed to do, the little conductor in the orchestra, getting everything to play nicely together. Getting stuff to play nicely together requires you to be close to the data. Where does the data live? In the SIEM. If you don't understand the data, how can you automate? Well, you can, but it's going to be a nightmare for you because you can end up terminating a business process that shuts down your entire facility, right? Your plant or whatever. So being close to the data is central for SIEM and SOAR to work effectively.
And efficiency is key. Efficiency is key.
Efficiency is key. And I mean,
because you have to do with a lot of things. A lot of things are going on these days, and you have to orchestrate your systems, your application. It's tough.
And I mean, Gartner came out with an analysis of saying that the average IT team manages 70 IT security solutions. Managing 70 solutions. And not only that, but each of them will have alerting, each of them will have reporting, each of them will see a little piece of essentially the big puzzle. But if you don't have a single place to dump that information, parse it, understand and make sense of it, figuring out the best way to increase security is going to be really, really, really difficult, almost impossible.
And this is the reason why you're offering your platform, right?
We're seeing this pattern. And I mean, coming out of Europe as maybe a smaller vendor compared to some of the American companies, we had to, from the very beginning, to integrate with what the customers had. We could not go into a very large company and say, you need to replace everything with what we have just because we tell you to. So what we did is we coexisted with whatever was in there, which made us integrate and essentially change our methodology and how we looked at the customers' networks, build a better data structure, build a better way to integrate these technologies to essentially work with what the customer already had. So this has been born out of necessity, I guess, for us as an organization, but it essentially put us in a situation that is highly advantageous for us now because every organization needs to fuse all of these different key points together into that single
thing. Of course, integrate everything. And how? What are you seeing? How customers, how companies can start with SOAR?
I think as a general hypothesis, as organizations, well, they need to mature their security operations, right? They need to mature how they automate and orchestrate. At the same time, I know it's a long-winded answer, but essentially what these organizations need to do is they need to bridge together how they investigate and how they hunt for threats. So you'd have these two sides of the coin. So either you're investigating a specific breach, and if what you found is potentially to happen again, you say, okay, let's put this in the bucket of saying, eventually I would like to automate this. If you're threat hunting, let's say you're not necessarily breached or working on an incident, you're typically going through your network. Are we finding any signs of a potential breach happening?
Mm-hmm.
If you uncover something that's meaningful, you can take that learning and say, okay, this is worthwhile automating as well. Typically, that's our advice to getting started. It is looking at what you're already doing today and seeing if we can somehow either help with our service or with the software itself to drive that automation. One of the pitfalls that many organizations are doing is that they go directly to, let's say, the top of the mountain, the most sophisticated use case for orchestration, where we say, no, we'll automate 10 or 15 different things in one use case, and then we will put an orchestration job in that will disable five things in different components and so on. But going all the way to the most sophisticated use case to begin with is rarely the right way to go. Typically, you will get some on the team will get disenfranchised. You will have mistakes, and you will lose the sponsorship or the buy-in in the organization before you get any traction with the solution.
Of course, some companies can do things by themselves, but another need help. Why should companies consider, for example, to bring MSP in for better security?
I think there's a couple of different reasons. Mostly, I would say the skill shortage is a thing, right? If it's 1 million or 2 million security specialists that we're lacking in the market,
professionals.
There's just a lot. But regardless of essentially how that looks, even if you can find the people and you can train them, you will have a hard time. Most companies will have a hard time retaining that talent. They will go somewhere else, somewhere more challenging, somewhere in a new environment. So unless you have a security culture or a large complex environment that's interesting for these young experts to work in, what you would typically find is that you're probably better served, at least for the 24/7 stuff, outsourcing that to someone who has the expertise, who has the muscle to do so.
Yeah. The people.
Exactly. And you'll see those people are probably, they would want to work in an MSSP, right? Where you can work on, you know, not the problem for one customer, but maybe problems for 10, 15 customers as part of your day-to-day job. And on top of that, let's face it, there is a lot of security work that you have to do in an organization. There's a lot you need to keep on top of mind. So if you're not looking at it from a skill shortage perspective, the investment required to keep your organization safe is significant. And sometimes it will be, although it might sound counterintuitive, it will, total cost of ownership, be cheaper for you to go out with a service provider than attempt to build this in-house.
Of course. And on the other side, how exactly does Lockpoint support MSPs?
I think one of the challenges for MSSPs is that they have to demonstrate and prove to their customers how it works. You need to justify the invoice you're sending, right? So one of the things we do is we, specifically for the MSSPs, we're licensing in a way where we grow with the MSSP. So there's no massive upfront investment. As the MSSP gains traction, commercial traction, we will actually grow with the MSSP. On the operational side and from a cyber perspective, MSSPs get access to our emerging threats protection, that is our cutting edge security research team. They will get access to experts.
Okay.
They will get access to a lot of that material they can then transform into value for their to their end customers. We have an entire part of the product that is tailored around optimizing and operating the large deployments that you will eventually end up having as an MSSP, right? If you manage 100 customers, there's a lot of portfolio management to deal with. And we actually have a product feature specifically designed for that, built with and for MSSPs.
Mm-hmm. And you have a new product that you introduced here at the conference. Could you tell us more about it? What is new? What is better?
So the new version of the product that came out during the conference is what we call Lockpoint 7.2. And this is the first version of the product that introduces case management systems. So previously, we could, of course, surface an alert and we could show the analyst what to do. And we had SOAR and playbooks and everything. But with case management in 7.2, we're completely fusing together alerts, the SIM, the SOAR, and our endpoint agent in a way that essentially creates a new home for the analyst in the product. Here I can see all of the observations. I can run my playbooks. I can run forensics on the workstations.
So you get more visibility.
Absolutely. You get that single point, single pane of glass, or single point where you can do everything. We've built up endpoint capabilities, so EDR, SOAR capabilities, SIM capabilities, and now all of those capabilities have a home in that case management system.
Let's move to Europe, exactly. You're a European company. What do you think? Why are customers increasingly turning to European security providers?
I think geopolitically, I think there's an old Chinese saying that may you live in interesting times. And I don't think it's a positive statement, essentially. And we are right now geopolitically in interesting times. There has been some uncertainty in Europe. Where do we have our U.S. allies? Some political instability is maybe a strong word, but it has been different times for us. GDPR came about as well here in Europe, right? Where we saw, okay, this is going to be a problem.
Oh, yeah.
The Scrims 2 verdict says data residency is a thing. You cannot necessarily place your data with a United States cloud provider, even though the data center is in Europe because of the US Cloud Act. The US Cloud Act says right now you can expect the US government to get access to the data. This is a driving concern for European customers. They are not allowed to do that. And we're seeing that significant inbound interest right now from companies, in particular Germany, France, and now with admission to NATO from Sweden as well, saying, okay, this is a thing we need to be mindful
all across
of.
Europe. So do you think that GDPR is the main reason for customers to come to you now and not to other cyber security vendors?
I think there is an over-reliance on a single country's solutions is a problem. I remember from my background in the Danish police, we typically sandwiched American, European.
You were with the Danish police?
Before joining Lockpoint, I spent 10 years as head of network security for the Danish police and in Danish healthcare.
Oh, wow, amazing,
so,
and surprising, yeah.
One of the things that was awesome about joining Lockpoint was I got a chance to build some of the solutions that I never had as a defender of networks. So coming from that customer side, going to the vendor side,
yes.
I brought a decade of experience into that. But one of the things we did at the police was we would typically sandwich technologies from different geographical regions together so we could have some kind of insulation against potential breaches. And we're seeing that as well, a reliance on US-only technology, which, let's face it, is what many companies end up having, is just a concern. And with NIS2 coming up,
yeah, it's very critical
2,
when it comes to data.
Exactly. You need to answer to your boards, how are we dealing with this? So for sure.
Okay. And maybe in few words, how can companies comply with the stricter EU critical infrastructure regulations?
I think I would say from an outside perspective, the NIS2 regulation and the new, essentially the EU picking up on cyber and taking it seriously, if you follow what has always been best practice, you are in a good position. Some of the things that are new to many organizations for NIS2 is the reporting requirements, right? You have, within 24 hours, you need to be raising a flag saying, we have an issue. Then within 72 hours, you need to be able to give precise, accurate reporting on what was breached. This is a significant amount of work that has to happen within a very limited amount of time.
For many companies, a challenge.
It's let's face it, it's almost going to be impossible. The other thing about NIS2 that is going to be a game changer for how companies think security is not only the fines, because most companies have come to understand that you get fined when you get breached because of GDPR. Similar type of fines.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can get fines from both GDPR and NIS2, but that would be a headache if you could, I guess. But I would say more importantly is that in NIS2, your board of directors and senior management can be held liable for breaches. So I think this shows a determination from legislators to take this way more seriously. And then the final part is NIS2 defines critical sectors. In each of these sectors, you will have computer incident response teams that are nationally owned.
You mean like healthcare and
energy, transportation. All of these will have what it calls CSERTs associated. You have to interact with these CSERTs. So many organizations that will be deemed sector critical, they will now have to both provide and use that information that comes, which again ties back to that integrate, orchestrate, work with the data that you get not only from your own company, but you're now legally obligated to do from the outside.
Of course. And talking a little bit about the present and also the future, you raise fresh money. You have a new investor. Could you tell me something about it?
Absolutely. So I think As a technologist, I love the fact that we now have a partner that sees Lockpoint as a platform to build great solutions. So
your new partner is Summa, right?
Summa Equity. They're Northern European and Scandinavian. And one of the things that I like about Summa is that they want to build a European category leader in cybersecurity. So they recognize this importance. And by being built on a platform play, we can build a lot of really awesome features on top of that SIM data that has been our background for the last 12, 15 years. And of course, in the current macroeconomic climate, seeing that recognition and actually being able to raise a significant amount of investment, it just is a testament.
How significant? Do you want to tell me numbers? Or
I
maybe
am,
not.
That's above my pay grade,
I think.
Okay. But anyway, the thing is that...
So you will join forces.
Absolutely,
and it's for cybersecurity.
It's both for continuing the development of capabilities, but also going out and acquiring other European startups that are doing excellent things. There is compared to 10 years ago, the European cyber market is growing. There's a lot of startups coming.
Of course.
It's a challenging market. So if we can bring the best of the brightest minds here in Europe together to actually make an impact, it would be amazing to do so.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Maybe to wrap up this talk, do you have some best practices or tips for companies?
I think as a...
Do's and don'ts.
I would say as a do's and don'ts, you should think about how you can demonstrate security. And this is both...
Demonstrate
security. So when I say demonstrate security is to your... If you're a security leader today, if you're a CISO today, and you have a security team that's working on technologies, ask them, how can you prove that this works? And when you talk to your board and senior management, you think about it. What is senior management worried about? The NIS2 fines, getting on the front page, share price going down if they're down, right? So being able to be an effective communicator between the guys that are stopping email phishing attempts every single day, and back to that boardroom concern about, yep, are we doing enough? And on the don'ts side, I mean, don't get blinded by people like me coming up and saying we have the absolute best product in the industry. Be critical about the security and technology choices you make, and understand the complete implications of doing so. Because essentially, the decisions you take as a security leader can make or break the company, in particular in the times we're in now with the threat landscape and the regulations coming up.
So we agree we need to do something about cybersecurity these days. I'd like to thank you, Christian, for the tips and the insights. It was an interesting and very honest talk.
Thank you.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Thank you.
And to all of you at work, at home, or on the road, thank you for joining us, and please don't forget to protect your organization to keep innovating. Goodbye.